All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. Ahead of tonight's 6:40 first pitch against the Cleveland Guardians, we're going to be joined by Cade Smith of the Guardians, but he's had to take a path today, which is fine.
Boo.
Cade's a friend of the show.
So yeah, he hasn't given up a homer in like 10 years, so he's loud.
Maybe that's why he's, if I go on that show, a dude's going to ask me why I haven't given up a homer.
Well, that'd be the first, that's the first question you'd ask.
Pretty much. And I would say it by Cade, I don't want to jinx you, but ..
Yeah.
Anyhow.
You know, he's thrown more than 25 pitches two times this year. You know, we were talking about that yesterday.
Yes.
About their pen and the 25-pitch limit and that kind of thing. Yeah. He's thrown 26 pitches twice.
Wow.
Which is not a lot over 25, obviously.
No.
But it would have been an interesting conversation to have with him. Do you actually pay attention?
Yeah.
Are you turning around going,
we'll
you know, what's the last number? Like, if I turn around, that thing says 28?
Yeah.
Is that it? Am I down to one? Do I get a longer leash than somebody else? That would have been an intriguing topic.
Guardians PR is good, so we'll get
them. Poor little Jays are throwing like four.
Moving on to some point.
Yeah.
It is Max Scherzer's, the much-awaited Max Scherzer start today.
Boy, I hope he's good.
Clearly, the main topic of conversation surrounding the Blue Jays right now. And again, if Max Scherzer, boy, if he can... If Max Scherzer can be Eric Lauer, that's at least a step forward.
Wow, that's a lot to ask.
That's at least a step forward. If he can give us that, if he can give me that, if he can give the Jays that, that is a big step forward.
Man, you don't want much.
Well, we'll see. You know, as I said, it's every Max Scherzer start, you're going to have to light a candle, and it's not going to be, frankly, for lack of production. It's going to be for health.
I think Caleb's right. Slider's important. I don't think velocity anymore. I don't know if that even matters.
No.
I think pitching ahead, I think he's 65-66% of throwing strike one in his career. I think he's got to be somewhere around that. I am looking forward to that Jose Ramirez.
Oh, God,
that's what Lauer did last night really well, is get him out with traffic, right? All three of those bats he had against Ramirez, the first inning was two on, he ended the double play, right? I think it was one on, the other two at bats in both of those that he made good pitches. And to Caleb's point about pitching away, Lauer did a good job of that. The big breaking ball away, the changeup away, the elevated fastball away. You know, it seems like Caleb knows what he's talking about when it comes to, you always hear that, right? Don't let this guy beat you. Well, what's that mean? How do you do that? And pitching away, making a guy, you know, if he does bridge you, making bridge you the other way is a good approach.
I hate to say it, but you look at that lineup. You look at Cleveland's lineup.
He's the one.
He's the one.
Yep.
Stephen Kwan will be on base, but yeah, it's Jose Ramirez. I mean, I keep saying, man, if this team had traded for Jose Ramirez, they would have had
no
Ernie. But they would have had their playoff win by now.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't have signed Vladdy either.
Anyhow.
Because they gave that guy money.
John Schneider, manager of the Blue Jays, did his pregame media availability today. And, let's hear what the skipper had to say.
Yeah. So Max is activated. We designated Spencer Turnbull for assignment. And, that's the move for today.
Only the one out in
I think just looking at kind of where his stuff was and kind of the runway we were able to give at this point, it kind of just didn't align with what we had hoped for, really, is the best way to put it.
In terms of length, Schultz pitched quite a bit yesterday, so if you had to turn to someone today?
I think you got multiple guys that are good for at least an inning and a couple guys that are good for one plus, so... not too concerned about it, obviously, going into it with the move that we did make. So, and feel comfortable about Max, you know, getting a full pitch count in.
John, it's been a process to get to this point, obviously, but the second goal for him is the other thing, the rotation. Did you prepare for playing back on 3 months? Like, how would you describe the process of getting there?
In depth, you know, and kind of winding, if you will. You know, it's you know, we all know who we're talking about in terms of the player and what he has done and what he is capable of still doing. So it was long, and I think to get to this point, you had to cross a lot of different bridges to get here. So he's very, very in tune with how he's feeling, and I think, you know, the last outing in AAA was really encouraging for not only for us, but for him in terms of his stuff and then how he felt afterwards. So that was the biggest thing was, you know, I mean, I think on any given day over the last 3 months, you could probably say, yeah, you could probably watch Max play catch. And I know we almost joked about it at times, but I think with him feeling the way he's felt over the past couple weeks after he's been off the mound has kind of gotten us to this point.
You've obviously gotten to know him as a person and as a rehabbing guy. How well do you feel you know, like, in-game Max, you know, like, what kind of things he wants from you during a game, or like maybe in terms of communication or check-ins on how he's feeling, stuff like that?
It's actually been kind of cool because we've you know, with him not being pitching, we've had a chance to have numerous conversations about that, and I think you kind of learn in real time a little bit. You know, I've joked with him about some of the more public discussions he's had on the mound with managers, and he's very honest with each outing. You know, it's with how he's feeling and kind of what he expects out of himself. And that's what I'm going off of. You know, I know I've joked about looking forward to the first time him getting pissed at me about taking him out. And I'm sure that'll happen at some point. I think for the, you know, for today and going forward a little bit, me, him, and Pete kind of being on the same page is going to be key, both before and during the game. So I think, you know, you let him get settled tonight, and I probably after, you know, second, third inning, whatever it is, we'll be checking in with him, seeing how he's feeling. And again, if we didn't feel comfortable of him, you know, pitching at least as much as he did in AAA, we wouldn't put him out there today.
Given the intense competitor he was supposed to be, what's your sense of how honest he will be with you during an outing if he's maybe grinding a little bit? Because it seems personality type, at least, he'd be the type to try to push through.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that even going back to spring training. You know, he understands if it's a bad outing and he needs to cover innings, he's going to do that. He understands if it's a good outing and, you know, you want to get to the point of maybe making a change. You know, he's going to let you know how he feels and why. And he's earned that. He deserves that, I think. So it's been fun to kind of talk through a lot of different scenarios with him and with Pete. And I'm sure there's going to be scenarios that pop up that we haven't talked about. And that's the beauty of the game. But he's definitely earned that right to, I think, let his opinion be known.
What's it like to get a Hall of Fame reinforcement as you're in a stretch of playing really good baseball and kind of rising up the standings?
It's really nice. You know, I think it's the first time for me throwing a surefire Hall of Famer into your rotation. So I was looking forward to today for a while, you know, ever since we kind of decided today was the day. And to me, it's nothing but good. It's nothing but really, really good for him and for us. Yeah, I like the way that we're playing, you know, as a whole the last couple of weeks, and to have some stability in the rotation between, you know, him getting back and Lauer doing what he's doing, along with the three other guys that we have, it's a really nice feeling.
And you may have got this a little bit on his first start, but what's like the one thing you're most excited for seeing him on the mound, and just both as a manager but as a fan of baseball?
Yeah, I think his strikeout strut around the mound is kind of, you know, it's pretty good. And I think with going through the rehab process too, it's you get a really up close and personal view of how he likes to use his pitches. So you're almost kind of thinking along with him a little bit. You can say that about every pitcher based on scouting reports and game plan. It's been cool for myself and Pete and the catchers to really watch how he likes to use his stuff in kind of pairing things together and why and where he wants guys playing behind him and why. And, you know, he talks through that in-game when he's not pitching. So it's cool to kind of, you know, get a little bit of a shot in the arm, I think, for our team tonight too.
Shy with Fisher, he's a guy who's shown he can go a couple of innings. He's also a guy who's earned leverage.
Yeah.
So how do you balance length versus leverage and length?
Yeah.
What is he right now?
I think he's a little bit of both, you know. It's kind of like what we've done with Flu a little bit when he first came up and up until now, to where you can come in and get an out or two, or you can, you know, cover us for a couple innings or an inning plus. The thing about Fish, his demeanor is always the same, and you have to be that way as a major league reliever, I think. So he's realizing pretty quickly that his stuff plays, and I think his fastball plays just as well as his breaking pitches, and he's starting to use that a little bit more. And you feel comfortable and confident when you bring a guy in and he looks you right in the eye and says, I got you, let's go. That's really cool to see for a young player.
Any concern about Lou Hardy the last couple of weeks?
No. I mean, his stuff is the same. I think, you know, watching him last night and a couple outings before, I think he's going a little bit quick, you know what I mean? And I think that happens for a young guy where it's around the midway part of a season. He's been up here for most of the year, first time in the big leagues, and we've asked a lot of him, you know, as kind of the second lefty where, you know, it could be leverage, it could be, I remember, you know, the first couple times I threw him in there, I think Soto was in there, and a couple lefties, Abrams and Wood against the Nationals were in there. It's tough assignment, so he's been thrown into it pretty quickly, and I think, you know, that happens to a young guy as you get, you know, around 80, 85 games into the season where it'll catch up to you a little bit. So we've talked about it. I would love to give him a little bit of a break, you know, and by doing that, other guys got to step up too.
Just a not an immediate question, but a general question about Dylan Tate.
Yeah.
I've noticed some, looks like the velocity has ticked up, a lot of two-inning outings. Is he getting noticed?
Yeah.
Is going better than they did up here?
I think so, yeah. The velocity is the big thing. You know, I thought we saw that before he came up, and then it didn't really translate consistently while he was here, so that is definitely a positive sign for him and for us.
For Max, just going back to spring training before, like beyond the health stuff, do you have any sense for his kind of goals that he was working on coming into the season with the new team in terms of pitch mix or in terms of stuff he wanted to improve coming into this year?
I think the biggest thing was being healthy and being able to recover and rebound from each outing. And it's not like he's got a new pitch that he's learning at age 40 or 41, whatever he is. I think the biggest thing that he wanted to accomplish, get to know his teammates, understand the environment that we do have here, and being excited to be part of it, you know. So I think we've accomplished that, and I think that he knows exactly what he's trying to do every single pitch. Yeah, kind of good news on Varsh. He ran today. He's still hitting live, throwing, doing everything. I think it was kind of just a little bit of a tweak yesterday. We actually did another MRI just to make sure last night, and everything was fine. Nothing new, nothing crazy, probably just a little bit of scar tissue irritation. I was actually FaceTiming with him and George a little bit earlier today, checking in. But he's doing all right, and I think it probably just set him back a day or two. Yeah, he ran today. It was kind of like running some striders in the outfield. Didn't get back on the bases. We'll probably do that again in the next couple days, make sure he can get up to full speed and go from there.
John, what have you seen from Alan Rodon in his kind of second stint?
Yeah, I feel like we talked about this a lot with Addy last year, went up and down a couple times, and, you know, with Davis a little bit coming back this year. He looks more comfortable. You can see his hands are a little bit different from where they were at the start, kind of pushed way back. And I think that he's kind of settling into what he needs to do here. And it takes time, you know what I mean? It takes time. But you can tell when a hitter either lacks or has confidence in the box, and kind of their mannerisms in between at-bats and kind of talking to him throughout the day. And I think that he's getting back to the point to where, you know, he knows he can hit here.
All right, that was John Schneider's pregame availability.
That was good.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
That was I mean, Max.
Mr. Max, how would you like me to speak to you?
That's pretty much what I love that. I mean, one of the things that made me kind of laugh was John talking about how wondering what it's going to be like when Max gets pissed off at him when he takes him out of a game. My reaction was, you better hope that he's in there long enough to the point where it becomes a talking point. But yeah, it's interesting. I love the comment from John. It's first for me, throwing a surefire Hall of Famer into the rotation. Listen, it's Max Scherzer starting tonight, and it's if in the least he can do what Eric Lauer did last night, at least you're giving the rotation some stability. And I think that's really what the Jays are looking for right now, is just stability. And I think there will be a trickle-down effect if he can do that. It'll be a trickle-down effect into the bullpen. You know, you've got the Yankees coming in next week. If you have Scherzer available and you've got Jimmy Garcia back, you know, if the Jays can kind of hold serve until the Yankees get in town and maybe make up some room on the Yankees, I mean, that'd be a hell of a job that this coaching staff has done managing its way around all these issues. By the way, you know that we mentioned we were going to have Cade Smith on today, and Cade Smith had to cancel. His dad, Tim Smith, who is a great social media follow coach, sends me a tweet. We're still going to call it a tweet. don't jinx him with the home run thing. So I sent him back and said he's one of our faves. You know, we'll take a rain check on it. Thumbs up, and he reposted it. So anyhow, yeah, it's just kind of funny because I was talking to Kevin about maybe he didn't want to come on because he knew the first question I'd ask is the fact that he hasn't given up historically his run of homerless innings is a historic thing. Like we're talking 50 years, roughly 50 years going back to guys like Dave Smith and all that. So. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, he's so good that they may trade their closer.
Well, I mean, as Chris Jimenez said, that's if you are the Guardians and you're looking to add a bat, you've got Emmanuel Clase and you've got other guys. You've got Trevor, Steven. You've got some leverage arms at the back end of that bullpen. And you certainly have Cade Smith. Mm-hmm. Cade Smith could close for this team. Cade Smith could close for a lot of teams.
Yeah, the problem with the Guardians are they're a couple of bats away.
Right.
That's their problem.
But are they a couple of bats away from making the playoffs? And that maybe not. I mean, they made the playoff. They made the play. Look how they made the playoffs last year.
Yeah, this is not last year. The Red Sox are probably going to be better the second half. The Jays are better. Rays are better.
I would suggest
there's more other teams
I think on balance the league's worse. Minnesota's worse. Kansas City's worse.
I think
on balance the American League is
Texas
worse.
I mean, Texas and Baltimore have opened the door for people like the Guardians.
Yeah. Seattle's
but never, for me, I think the Rays being better, the Jays being better.
You got to get off the Mariners thing. The Mariners stink.
Did I say Mariners?
You threw them in there. Mariners are going to stink.
I said Mariners?
You threw them
in. No, I did not.
You did. The Mariners are not going to make the playoffs. The Mariners are going to do something stupid.
Well, I think you have to put them in the conversation because of what their rotation can do and healthy.
Their rotation's hurt.
And when the big dumper. I said when healthy. Again, you're that dude that only hears what he wants to hear.
They got one guy in the lineup.
That's it. And they're still right there in getting close to a playoff spot.
They stink.
Like, man.
And their general manager's going to trade Cal Raleigh for a bucket of balls anyhow because he's another one of those guys that thinks he's the smartest guy in the room.
I've been around with them dudes for a long time. Well, I know how he feels.
We've been giving you the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here on Blair and Barker. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply. Our last question and answer was, he's a five-time All-Star who played his last MLB game in 2019. The Blue Jays and the Yankees are the only American League teams he played for in his career. He never won a championship but reached the World Series once. Unfortunately for him, his team got swept. The answer is Troy Tulowitzki.
Wow. Wonder how it would feel to get swept in a World Series.
Would you rather go to the World Series and get swept or not go to the World Series?
That's a tremendous question.
Would you rather lose in the ALCS than go to the World Series and get swept? See, I think the whole thing is that you go to the once you go to the World.
Does anybody ever remember second place?
Yes.
Unless you've been swept.
Once you're swept, people remember
you, right?
No, I would argue most people remember teams that make it to the finals.
The normal fan's not going to remember normal second place. No, they're not.
Hold it. You're lying.
Unless they've been swept.
No.
And then you'll remember.
No, you're going to remember who the Yankees beat in this World Series or who Houston beat in that World Series. Getting to the World Series is a big deal. Getting swept isn't great. Don't get me wrong.
I don't agree.
But getting swept is, that's just silly.
Well, it's not.
Well,
it's your opinion, and it's a real bad one.
No, it's just silly.
It's a good question
and besides,
you bring up.
You're not finishing second if you get to the World Series and lose. You are the AL champions, for example, and the league and National League champions.
Oh,
today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and the Yankees. You're just so wrong consistently. It is amazing how
it is true. All I had to say.
Being wrong.
All I had to say was I'm so used to you being the smartest guy in the room to just have your eyebrows go straight up and down and just waiting for some reason.
Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and Yankees at the Rogers Center on July 2nd. He played for both the Yankees and Blue Jays, but wore the cap of a different team for his Hall of Fame plaque. He played exclusively for American League teams after starting his career in the National League. He only played one season with the Jays, but it was a memorable one as he won the World Series championship, the only World Series championship of his career. Again, he played for both the Yankees and Blue Jays, but wore the cap of a different team for his Hall of Fame plaque. He played exclusively for American League teams after starting his career in the National League. He only played one season with the Jays, but it was a memorable one as he won the only World Series championship of his career. If I'm not mistaken, he also could have played in the NBA and the NFL. He may, in fact, have been drafted in one of those. I don't know. You can text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. Standard message and data rates may apply. Anything else you want to criticize me for before I go on? Feel free.
Well, if you,
I mean, we got 2 minutes.
Me.
We got three minutes to kill.
You wouldn't put me on the spot. Yeah,
feel free, take your shots. Go ahead.
If you wouldn't have put me on the spot, I would. I'm sure I could think of something.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, there's nothing. You know what's making me this way? Is it's warm in this room. And once I get warm, yeah, I know.
Once you get warm, you get swirly.
I do get swirly. Yeah. You yell at me because you said, well, if you keep saying it, don't mean it's going to change anything.
Once you get warm.
Well, I'm not warm. I'm hot.
Once you get hot, the Virginia in you comes out. That is true.
I'm on the other side of the mountain.
You're on the other side of the mountain.
Gibby.
John Gibbons.
Yeah, Gibby, you deserve that. What is that? That 10 of 11 they've lost. Is that what it is? 10 of 11. I think it's 10 of 11. You deserve that, Gibby. No, I'm just kidding.
Jeff Passan is ESPN's MLB insider. He and Kylie McDaniel got together to put together 50 trade candidates. One, there are no Jays on the list. Two, the Jays are connected with every starting pitcher, which pretty much would make sense given where we are. And quite frankly, even if Max Scherzer goes out and looks like Mad Max, you know, the Jays are probably going to be in the market for pitching.
You wouldn't change your mind if he goes out and dominates and looks say two or three starts in a row. You wouldn't want to go out now and get you a bullpen arm, maybe an eighth inning guy instead of that.
But I'd also want another starter just in case.
I mean, if Max does things and Lauer is okay,
I want another starter.
You're cooking
just in
with
case.
Gravy now, you can go get you an eighth inning guy. Boy, do what you want with Jeff Hoffman.
Jeff Passan joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Nick Kiprios.
And I'm Justin Bourne.
We're diving deep into everything happening in Leafland and the biggest stories around the NHL.
Real Kipper and Bourne, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Welcome back to Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
You don't agree, huh?
Kevin Barker has declared tonight. Must win esta noche, as he said tonight.
Yeah, you know what that means?
Tonight.
Yeah. I speak better Spanish than I do English.
This is true.
Okay.
But then you played a lot of baseball in the Dominican
Republic. A ton.
So.
Heavy.
Kevin Baker.
Yeah, it's tremendous. I love that place.
Did they actually think your name was Baker?
Without a doubt. Vladdy still calls me Baker.
But I can't be Baker.
Still calls me that. Everybody that... Mo calls me Baker.
Yeah, but Mo does it because it's a joke.
No, he doesn't. He's known me for I don't know how many years. And he'll text me, and the text will say, hey, Baker.
I could see Mo doing it just for giggles.
You know, when he's in Louisville, you know, looking after his horses that he's got, which is pretty cool. You seen that? He was in the Kentucky Derby.
No, was he?
Yeah, he's got a horse. He had one. I don't think it's any good. Well, maybe it was. I wasn't really paying attention, but that he seemed to be pretty excited about that. He likes that.
Folks, all I can tell you is that Barker is absolutely huge in the Dominican Republic, among Dominican ball players. I always tell the story. Was it Juan Encarnacion who was here with the Jays? And
yeah, he's
Juan wouldn't do any interviews in English. Well, Eddie was like that too. Eddie would have an interpreter. So this is maybe the first day I've shown up at the field with Barker. Swear to God, true story.
It's Edwin you're talking about that did this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also Juan. Edwin comes up and starts speaking perfect English to Barker. You know, and I'm standing there, and there are a couple of other writers who basically, and it was great. And got one Encarnacion from, I don't know what the hell, he was stretching or something in right field. I see this guy making a beeline coming here, coming towards us, and he doesn't have his uniform on because it's early BP. Well, who the hell is this guy? And he, like, grabs Barker and just bear hugs him.
Yeah.
It was one. It was tremendous.
Yeah, I love it, please. I had so much fun there.
Well, you made a lot of people crap ton of money in the Dominican Republic.
I don't know about that, but it was a lot of fun. Like, you know, they didn't care about your age. They only cared about if you were good or not.
And
I
went over there. Runs.
Yeah, and I got big hits when it mattered. Like, you would want me up, buddy. I was first in line, Jeff. Okay? Hey, buddy. And it was a good time. I had a great time. It was part of my season. You know, I got the times there for about, I would say, a solid, I don't know, 8-10 years in a row where I was pushing, I'm going to say 220 games a year. I mean, that's playing.
You made more money in winter ball.
I'm saying playing. I'm talking about playing, like, not, you know, not load management, playing. And I was just used to it. I mean, it's just part of it. I didn't even have to ask. They just sent me a ticket.
There you
Pretty
go.
Cool.
Yeah.
I was raring and ready to go.
Somehow you and load management, I can't put those two words together for a variety
of
reasons.
Wouldn't go well.
No, they wouldn't. Let's bring in Jeff Pass and ESPN's MLB insider. Yeah, I love when we get passing on halfway through the conversations because he knows how my brain works and he knows all the double entendres that I'm anyhow. Double and I'll explain.
Yeah, education. I get it.
Yeah. Again, that's the Virginian in you coming out the other side of the mountain. We'll talk about it later. By the way, Passon, I got to give you a shout out for one thing before we talk about your article. We had Stan Kasten on yesterday, and we were talking about the Dodgers pitching injuries, and he referred to your book at least twice.
Yeah, he dropped you.
Like, he name dropped.
A couple of times.
He name dropped the book a couple of times, which I thought was, I'm not surprised, but it was pretty cool because Stan's done a lot in sports. You know, and I thought it was.
That's very flattering of him. That's great to hear. Thank you for letting me know.
Yeah, don't be afraid to sign one and send it up here, you know.
I've got one.
To Kevin Barker, the greatest baseball player I've never seen.
don't be afraid to buy one and then I'll
there you go. Why would I buy it if I actually know the guy that wrote it?
I mean,
why would I buy it?
Isn't that the famous story about R.A. Dickey? When R.A. Dickey wrote his book, he had a bunch of books in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And I think it was Josh Tolley went up, and Josh Tolley figures fairly prominently in the book because he caught him all the time. And, Dickey said to him, yeah, $21.
He did not.
Yes, he did.
You're lying.
I'm not lying.
Man, that's crazy.
I'm not lying.
That's crazy.
I'm not lying. I have that from a fair, I would call one of those clubhouse sources that you hope is accurate. That's probably the best way to put it. But anyhow, what was the other thing? Oh, yeah, Stan said that he thought he had an answer to pitching injuries. He suggested to his baseball people that they should approach the commissioner's office and put a rule in that any pitch over 94 miles an hour was a ball, at which point one of his baseball people said to him, then they just throw their arms out trying to throw breaking stuff. So anyhow, there it was.
All correct.
Absolutely. Your 50 trade candidate article obviously got us talking yesterday. I mean, I love trade deadline stuff. I really do. And, you know, shock of all shocks, anytime there was a starting pitcher mentioned, and there were a few of them, you had the Jays very high up among teams that were interested in that. Just and I know that there were percentages involved in this. I know when Kylie and you worked together on it. The first question I wanted to ask you, though, is you had Alex Bregman up there pretty highly. Do you think there's a chance that he gets moved?
Yeah, I think it's unlikely.
Okay.
But we put him on there with a 10% chance.
Okay.
And with lists like this, Jeff, you know what it's like putting them together. It's like, on one hand, you know, the way we approach it is if somebody has a chance of getting dealt, we want to put him on there. Mm-hmm. And we probably, you know, this is going to be constantly updated, so we probably should have put Dylan Cease on there, Robert Suarez. There were a few others that we missed. You know, the first time doing everything, you're not going to get it exactly right. But look at the way the Red Sox are playing. look at the fact that Alex Bregman has an opt-out after this season. Look at the fact that he's making $40 million a year right now. There aren't a whole lot of teams that can go out and get him, but there's also no more impactful guy who could be available at the trade deadline this year. And it's why, to me, the Red Sox and the Diamondbacks are like the two most fascinating teams. What are they going to do over the next 4 weeks to convince their ownership and their front offices that they shouldn't sell, particularly in an environment, guys, where I believe right now there are 17 teams that are over 500 and a number of teams that are just under 500 and still within the playoff hunt. All you've got right now are really six teams whose records suggest, you know, sell Mortimer, sell. So, at this point, it's like, who's going to be that opportunistic team that doesn't believe, even if it could make the postseason, that it's got a shot to advance deep, and then turns around and says, well, in a complete seller's market, why aren't we trying to take advantage? Because that's what I think this is going to wind up being, a seller's market where an opportunistic team can jump in there and really boost their farm system.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, looking at what the two New York teams are sort of kind of going through now, that always, I think, adds an extra dimension to the market when there's a sense that the New York teams may need to do something. I that could just be the old baseball writer in me talking, but I've always thought that when there's that idea out there, it creates more of a sense of expectation, I would guess, on the market.
Yeah, I feel like New York teams always have to do something, though, whether they're riding high or whether they're struggling the way that the Mets and the Yankees are right now. I think they're going to be in the middle of the mix come July, and you know, particularly after the All-Star break. To me, the fascinating teams are the ones that are good but not clearly great, and there are a lot of those right now. Which ones feel like they have enough to go and push their chips in? Which ones are a little more desperate than the others? And when I think of the Jays, that's the word I think of, considering what they've done over, you know, the last decade or so. Mm-hmm. There's some desperation there to try and win right now.
Is it 100% the Jays only go after a starting pitcher, or any chance if, say, Santander doesn't come back sooner than later, they may go after an offensive player too?
It would not shock me if they went after an offensive player. And I think they should, honestly. Like, at this point, guys, and you see it every day, so you know this better than I do, is this offense enough?
I mean, if Anthony Santander, this is kind of something that's happened the last couple of days, is we just have sort of discovered that it appears that he's not doing anything baseball-related, which is... makes me think that, yeah, if you don't have Anthony Santander back, regardless of what your offense is doing, yeah, I think you have to at least consider adding a bat and just kind of make it work out.
It's a ton of heavy lifting, though, Jeff. I just don't know how you do both, right? I mean, are you looking for a number four in the rotation, or are you looking for, say, a number two? I mean, that's a big difference, right? Can you do both with what's going on with Jeff Hoffman? Do you need... You know, I know Jimmy Garcia might be back soon, but do you need an extra guy maybe that can throw in the eighth and ninth inning? It's a lot of heavy lifting. Can they do that?
I agree. It's a reasonable question at this point. Can they? Sure. I think they've got the farm system to go out and get both of those types of guys. It sends me, though, into a parallel universe in which I actually exist right now. So let me peel back the curtain a little bit here. We're doing a story right now where myself, Kylie McDaniel, and David Schoenfield are drafting for all of the teams. But in this mock draft, we are allowing trades. Mm-hmm. Tell me if you would do this. I am picking for all of the teams in the West. Kylie has all the teams in the East. We are on the eighth pick right now for the Toronto Blue Jays. If you were the Blue Jays right now, would you trade the eighth pick to the Arizona Diamondbacks for Eugenio Suarez, Shelby Miller, and the 25th pick?
Absolutely.
Could I have Zach Gallen instead?
Nope.
See, the problem
with Zach Gallen instead of Suarez? You want Zach Gallen instead of Suarez?
Yeah, I would do that.
Okay.
I would take the two pitchers.
Okay.
Yeah. See, the problem with the Jays is the Jays don't really have a guy that can sort of pitch in game one of a playoff series. They don't really have – I mean, it's going to be picked between one of the three guys that they already got here, but they don't really have one. That's the problem.
I don't know. I mean, Chris Bassett is nobody's idea of, like, an ace, but I guess I'm comfortable with Chris Bassett going game one. Are you not?
Ah, boy, not me. I mean, I'm picking between the other two guys. I mean, Jeff has said Berríos numerous times.
Just because I know what he's going to do. I know what he's going to do.
He's predictable, right?
I mean, Bassett's pretty predictable too, right?
The only thing I would say is the guy, part of me thinks back to Berríos' outing against that everything that happened in that playoff series against Minnesota. I just think the guy that's most likely to give me one of those wow outings in game one is Berríos. Because
by the way, Kylie just turned down my trade and went and took the guy who I wanted to take for the Diamondbacks. He has Seth Hernandez going to the Blue Jays with the eighth pick. Are you familiar with Seth Hernandez at all?
Not familiar with Seth Hernandez. You'll have to fill me in on
Seth Hernandez goes to Corona High School in California. He is probably the most polished high school pitcher in years. A guy who has the ability to be one of those 20-year-olds who makes it to the big leagues. Like, he's really, really good. And that's who I wanted to get there, and the little turd snaked him from me.
I mean, that would make given the uncertainty around Alec Manoa, given the contractual status of a bunch of guys, given the fact that Jose Berríos does have an opt-out,
I would say this front office probably don't like that pick because they may not be here next year.
I was going to say if
that's that. Yeah,
this front office may be more inclined to do to take the trade.
They
may be more inclined to take the trade. In fairness to them, because the one thing they have done in the past is they have overpaid for free agent pitchers.
Fair.
They know they have to do it.
Yeah,
they know they have to do it, and they will gleefully give you an extra year to come here. If you want.
Yep.
It's almost like there's a tax attached to it. Let me ask you about the Baltimore Orioles, who, getting criticism because they hung on to their young guys last year, didn't necessarily make that move to get them over the hump. At this point, are they where they are? Are they just as well advised to not trade one of their stud young players at this point? And maybe try to get something by moving, as you guys point out, guys like Cedric Mullins or O'Hearn, or do you think you could see the Orioles moving one of those guys for maybe a couple of parts that would help them, not necessarily this year, but certainly next year? Because at some point they're going to have to bring another starting pitcher in besides Grayson Rodriguez, right?
Absolutely. And the issue is which of those pieces do you move? I mean, Heston Kjerstad is the one that makes the most sense, but he's been so bad in his time in the big leagues that trade value there has gone down. Kobe Mayo is another guy potentially, because they've got Adley Rutschman at catcher. They've got Sam Basayo, who's also a catcher, but has played some first base, raking at AAA right now. So Mayo, though, again, another guy who has struggled in his time in the big leagues. And I think there's a real lesson to be taken from this, which is that while having depth is an important thing and a beneficial thing, if guys don't get regular at-bats, it's really, really hard for them to break out in the big leagues. Just think of it this way.
Yeah.
The guys who are usually as good as all of these top prospects are, best player on their high school team, best player on their travel ball team, never missed a game there. They get drafted, they find success, don't miss games in the minor. Like, adjusting to that schedule, and Kevin, I think you can speak to this, not because of any personal experience per se, but maybe so. If you don't have every day at bats, finding that rhythm can be a really difficult thing to do. And it takes an especially mentally strong younger player to adjust to a platoon role, let's say, or a part-time role. And the Orioles guys just haven't done a great job of doing that, and I can understand why.
Yeah, it's hard, right, when you don't get those at-bats. I was a big dude. I had a long swing. Long swings needed bats. Like you need to be able to get your foot down. Everything got to work in unison. When it ain't, you look like a fish out of water. That's exactly the way I looked. And the first time I took a fastball in from Kevin Brown and hit my bat and the barrel went further than the ball, my sort of, you know, big league career was kind of over because of what you're saying there. So, you know, it is a very hard thing. Organizations have to be understanding. I think that's sort of where you're at in 2025, Jeff. Whenever we listen to John talk, you know, he looks mm-hmm. at real certain things to talk about when it comes to, you know, he was starting that theme in spring training. We just want him to move the ball forward. Mm-hmm. And remember, yep. Jeff, and yeah, I yep. looked at Jeff, and Jeff looked at me, and we were like, we never heard that before.
Get but a better running game.
Yeah,
you know, it's like
but
a football
it makes
thing.
Total sense where they're just not trying to put so much on these dudes' plates that they can't handle, and that's different than when I played. It was basically, here it is, big fella. If you can't do it, you ain't going to be here long, and it's your fault. Huh.
You know what, though? This is, I fear, what analytics misses. And I don't think that it takes into account the difficulty mentally. As hard as it is to transition from AAA to the big leagues physically and you know what, especially on the hitting side, just go find me a rookie hitter who has been gangbusters from the jump. There are not a whole lot of those. I mean, even Jacob Wilson, like, he hit 250 last year, and he's figuring it out this year and hitting 350 plus. But guys who come up from the minor leagues and find immediate success on the hitting side are few and far between. And so what the Orioles have done and the position they've put themselves into, it's a first world problem when you have too many bats for the lineup, but it's also one of those things where they have wasted, and I mean wasted, a year of Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, Jordan Westberg, Colton Cowser, et cetera's prime, because they didn't go out and prioritize pitching nearly the way that they did hitting. And they weren't willing to move some of those guys because they have so much club control. They don't want to give away a star. And I don't blame them on one hand, but on the other, it's like, hey, you got to make the big league team better right now if the goal is to win.
You know, I was going to say, we watched the Skeens Mizorowski outing before we came in.
Poor Skeens.
We came in here, and that was exactly that was Kevin and I were looking at these two guys pitch. And
how the hell,
you know,
do you hit?
Well, how do you? Yeah, that's what Kevin actually said. I'd like to actually just stand in against one of those guys just to see what it looks like.
Yeah,
just to see what it looks like coming at me. But my point was this: we're watching Skeens and Mizorowski pitch, and you got one guy who, you know, his team's got no chance of winning.
Zero.
Less than zero. And, you know, Mizorowski's with the Brewers. They could do Brewers things. And it just kind of reinforced, man. I mean, if you're the Pirates,
do him a solid.
Well, I don't even know. What do you do if you're the Pirates and Paul Skeens?
That's a great question.
Oh, good Lord. What do you do if you're the Pirates? Well, spending money would be nice.
Right.
Like going out and getting some guys in free agency on the hitting side of the ball, because the pitching's good. They have, beyond what they have right now on the big league roster, they also have Bubba Chandler. And, you know, they have done a good job in recent years of developing pitching. That is one thing Pittsburgh has been extremely successful at, but on the hitting side of the ball, O'Neill Cruz is a terminally frustrating player. Mm-hmm. Brian Reynolds is fine. He's solid. Like beyond that, what do you got long term there? Like, Key Brian Hayes is really good defensively and can't hit. You know, at shortstop, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is going to be traded. Nick Gonzalez, when he's healthy, can hit, but not always healthy. First base has been a black hole there. Catcher, you know, they picked Henry Davis number one overall. That hasn't worked out. There's just not a lot there for the Pirates right now. And so you need to go out and get big league hitters and hope that guys like Connor Griffin and Tamar Johnson develop into big leaguers sooner than expected.
No way you trade Skeens, is there?
Look, it's very easy for me to say from the comfort of my air-conditioned home in Kansas City. If I am the Pittsburgh Pirates right now and I do not have a commitment from ownership that I'm going to be able to go out and spend money in order to supplement what I've got right now on the big league roster offensively, then you have to consider it. Now they're not mm-hmm. like that's not in their plans at this moment. But if that is what you are working with, then I think they should consider it. And I know that's painful for Pirates fans to hear, and I'm sorry to say that, but look at the way that the most successful teams operate.
Yeah.
They find windows, and the truth is, by the time the Pirates' window to win comes along, unless they go out and hit some whoppers in free agency and actually spend money and add to this team, Skeens is going to be on the verge of free agency when you probably have to trade him anyway. So if you can do a Bo Jackson deal, if you can do a Juan Soto to San Diego deal, which you know, with James Wood playing the way he is and C.J. Abrams the way he is and Mackenzie Gore the way he is, seems to be the new standard for mm-hmm. bountiful baseball trades, then, yeah, it can be a franchise changer. And it would suck to lose a generational pitcher, but the way you're operating right now, after this season, you got 4 years of him, and then get the hell out of there as fast as anyone could.
We just have a couple of minutes left. I want to ask you this. Cal Raleigh, if the Mariners make the playoffs, does he have a legitimate shot at MVP over Aaron Judge? And will that play a role in the decision?
I know when I voted for MVP, I never voted based on a team's success. And I understand that when you're talking about most valuable, you tend to look at playoff teams, but I could never get past the idea of either penalizing or rewarding somebody mm-hmm. for his teammates.
Yeah.
So it's why I focus more on the rate statistics than the counting statistics. And via the rate statistics, Aaron Judge is demonstrably better than Cal Raleigh right now. But Cal Raleigh's got a lot going for him, both in terms of his performance and narratively. And I don't discount that he's a catcher who plays almost every day and won a platinum glove last year. Like, he's good at everything. Mm-hmm. He's on pace to steal 20 bases this year, guys. And he's like 6'2", 240. Like, he's not the guy who should be stealing 20 bases, but he's an extremely smart base runner, and he's a phenomenal defensive player, and he's dangerous from both sides of the plate. Like, full package, but he's still got work to do to catch Aaron Judge.
Jeff, really good of you to join us, as always, my friend. Have a great week.
Thanks,
be
buddy.
Well.
See ya.
Likewise, gentlemen. Take care.
Take care. You. Jeff Passan is ESPN's MLB insider.
Do you agree with him?
Completely. Yeah, completely. If you look at the I think MLB Network did a statistical comparison. Judges, yeah. But, I mean, as someone who's voted, picked MVP awards before, I voted for guys, voted for A-Rod 1 year when his team wasn't very yeah. good. I looked at it this way. I'm more likely to vote for you if you're in a contending team. But if you do something historic, yeah, that goes out the window. And I mean, if Cal Raleigh, what if he finishes with how many home runs does he have now?
He'll on pace for more than 50.
Then I got a catcher every day, 50. I mean, yeah, the weight of sometimes a guy has a year where you just go, holy cow.
Well, I mean, it's going into the season, right? It's Judge, Ohtani. What do other guys have to do to overtake them?
Basically, or talk hit 50 a voter or 60 like home, yes,
we'll talk a voter like you out of it. Because basically you got your mind set on two dudes
yeah.
already. What's the numbers got to be like? 32 and 69, almost 80 games in is not enough?
Well,
if it ended today, you ain't giving it to Raleigh?
No. I wait and see what the end of the year.
Wow. If it ended today.
No, I give it to Judge.
Of course you would.
I give it to Judge.
That's the point. Like, they'll never be able to talk you out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Numbers like that. He leads baseball in categories that matter when it comes to hitting in the middle of the order, and he's one of the best catchers in baseball.
I'd still go with Judge.
Of course you would.
But if he continues doing this at the end of the year, he'd probably be the guy. But right now, I'd still go with Judge.
You would?
Yeah, because I absolutely would.
Ohtani?
I'd have to think about the National League. I don't know. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Anybody in Philadelphia?
I'll let you think about it. You can answer tomorrow.
Probably still go with it.
Yeah, of course you would.
Probably still go with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Looking forward to Max tonight?
I got some candles in the car.
6:40 is the first pitch. It is Thursday. We'll be along following the game with Blue Jays Talk. Tomorrow's an afternoon game. A reminder, we'll be on at Blue Jays Talk and Blair and Barker for an hour after the game. So enjoy Max's start tonight. Keep your fingers crossed. Light some candles, whatever it is you do. And we'll chat manana.